International.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Hello, everyone. I'm Keith Powell. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of Media Network Plus from the studios of PCJ Radio International. Social media is something, of course, that we talk about on a regular basis here on the program. We talked about, of course, all the positives, right? But there's one negative that, especially over the last 14 months, has become front and center. Now, how many of you, let's say if you go onto your Facebook page right now, and you look at the homepage, not your homepage, but the general homepage, you'll see all kinds of posts from various organizations and individuals with news stories that seem, well, rather dubious. It could say, CBS News reports that, I don't know, Hillary Clinton is becoming a man. You know the kind of story. Completely outrageous. But what is astonishing to me is how many people will then share it and like it and comment and repost, not even taking into consideration that it's probably fake. And if you look closely, it is. Now, what you're seeing, especially over the last couple of years, there was a time where if you saw one of these stories that appeared on, say, Twitter or Facebook or other social media outlets, there was maybe the website of the organization that was posting it. And some of these organizations, of course, were very peculiar to begin with. But what you're seeing now are URLs that look like they could be the URL of, let's say, CNN International or BBC or CBS News or whoever. But if you look closely, they don't always, or actually they never end in .com. They always end with .dot something else. There is one that was online. I'm not sure if it still is. I haven't checked in a while. It was called ABC News Go. Now, not ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Company, but the American Broadcasting Company in the United States. And if you looked at the link, it looked just like the one for ABC News, except the dot at the end had a different ending completely. Even the logo looked like it was from ABC News, but in 1 second you can tell right away that it wasn't. So what's going on here? There's been viral news that has been taking place a lot over the last 18 months. Especially during the general election that was held in the United States. There were rumors about everybody and every politician. Rumors about Donald Trump, rumors about Hillary Clinton, rumors about, well, even the previous candidates that were running for the Republicans and the Democrats. The funny thing, though, is people will just share it. Now, this kind of fake news has really come to the forefront in the last few weeks. Donald Trump, president-elect of the United States, well, president-elect as of the recording of this show, by the time it goes out, he will be president of the United States, has blasted many credible news organizations for spreading fake news. But he actually has no evidence to even back this up, because most of the fake news, or the vast majority of it, well, let's just say all of it, is being spread through social media. Craig Silverman is a journalist. He's also the founder of Regret and Error at the Polnart Institute. He's also with the Toe Center for Digital Journalism at Columbia University in New York City. He wrote a report called Lies, Damn Lies, and Viral Content. He speaks next to Richard Ady.
We've seen the emergence of what I call fake news websites. These are websites that look like real news websites. They have names like National Report and The Daily Current, but they are completely made up of fake news articles. And it's not satire. It's not like The Onion or someone making social commentary. They're just inventing articles about newsworthy things to get people to share them, which drives traffic, which they then monetize with ads. And so, you know, what we have is this culture where things are getting out there and the stuff that's fake looks and reads a lot like the stuff that's real, and people are being fooled. And at the same time, I see journalists who get fooled by these fake news websites, and they treat them like real sources. And so we have this kind of ongoing pollution of the information environment that just keeps going and going and going.
A lot of this is about how this stuff is pointed to, isn't it? And it seems to me that you're saying there's not enough criticism or a critical approach in the headline.
Sometimes the headline itself is actively misinforming people. And the first thing that people should realize is that headlines are probably the most powerful piece of a story. The headline and the photo are what people look at first. It doesn't matter whether it's in a printed edition or it's on a website. The headline is extremely important. It frames how people understand anything that comes after it in that story. And one of the things that surprised me in the research was I would often find headlines that would declare something that was a rumor, that was, you know, unverified at that moment, would declare it as true. And then if you went and you read the first two paragraphs, you would say, well, this is according to this. And you might even see them being very clear and saying, you know, we were unable to independently confirm this.
What about when people use question marks in headlines and they use hedging language and attributions? That is sort of trying to cover your ass in a way, isn't it?
It's a very common thing that journalists do when, you know, we're trying to signal to the reader that, you know, this is out there and we don't really know whether it's true or not. So we've decided to point to it. We've decided that it's enough of an interesting thing or close enough to perhaps being true that we should talk about it. And then when we talk about it, we use words like reportedly or according to. And one of the ones that's really bad is when we do it and express something as a question mark. So this is something that's actually been studied. They're called, you know, innuendo statements or innuendo headlines. And if you were to have one that ended with a question mark saying, you know, is Bob linked to the mafia? Well, the way people process that is to actually implicate Bob as being linked to the mafia.
All right. Well, some of these, I suppose, different problems have added up to real world examples. And the things that you quote have been very in the news recently, and that's Ebola. So Ebola in the UK or Ebola in the US?
Yeah, I mean, any situation where there's a lot of anxiety, where there is confusion, and where there may not be a solid grounding of information. So Ebola, you know, how does it spread? What do we know about it? People being afraid of it, perhaps more afraid than they should be given, you know, the science or the numbers at that moment. So what we saw during the Ebola outbreak, when there were some cases in the U.S. back in the fall, were one, fake news websites writing stories claiming that entire towns had been quarantined due to Ebola, which was false and which got shared a huge amount of times because it went right to the element of fear. And what we also saw were people passing messages over messaging apps like WhatsApp or on Facebook, you know, reporting that, hey, there's, you know, there's Ebola in this city, there's Ebola in this town, there's Ebola at this hospital. And so Ebola was a case where there were a tremendous amount of rumors, stuff circulating on social media, fake news websites jumping on it. And there were times, of course, when news sites would run articles, you know, with question marks about, you know, is Ebola here? Is Ebola there? Are you, how at risk are you? And it would really ratchet up the fear level.
It's worth pointing out, actually, and your own work reflects this, Craig, that a rumor can have real value in terms of if you forego, I suppose, the sort of fast food approach of let's just put it out there, it actually might lead to something that's really interesting and genuinely newsworthy. And you've followed up some rumors.
It's exactly true. This is certainly one of my personal realizations. You know, for this research, I was basically maintaining a database of rumors, and some of those rumors were about things like Ebola or Islamic State, where we saw a lot of rumors continuing to emerge. And over time, by maintaining this database and looking at them and seeing the shared characteristics of these rumors, I started to connect the dots a little bit. You know, another example would be North Korea. You know, when Kim Jong-un disappeared for a period, you know, that was longer than had happened before during his ruling time, there were a tremendous amount of rumors. Well, he's addicted to Swiss cheese and that's made him ill. He has the gout, and on and on and on they went. And at a certain point, it just became clear to me that, you know, there was this kind of rumor economy around North Korea where you had a scarcity of information. You had a lot of fear and uncertainty about this, you know, unstable ruler in this country. And that was becoming this breeding ground for rumors. And you saw a lot of expat North Koreans feeding these rumors. You saw a lot of unsourced reports in British tabloids. And so I ended up doing, you know, some reporting about this North Korean rumor economy. And you can learn a lot from rumors. There is intelligence to be found there, but you have to treat it as something to look at and to follow and to investigate rather than just as something to sort of throw out there.
Yeah. And it's not enough to say, well, this, we've looked at this story and these are the reasons it's wrong. It's important, actually, because we're storytelling animals, to provide a counter-narrative.
That's it. We respond to stories. We respond to narrative. And if your instinct is to just lay out all the facts in a very clinical way or to inundate somebody with all the facts about why that idea is wrong or why that piece of information is incorrect, they're going to tune out. So you have to find a way to craft a narrative, to actually replace the narrative that's in their mind with a counter-narrative that has some appeal to it that makes sense, and that also has a sense of logic to them that they can adapt it and access it and process it very quickly. And that makes it also important to have, you know, very clean narratives. And this is why the hoaxers actually have such an advantage, is because they're not constrained by actual facts. They can just make up any story that is very impactful, that ties up very nicely, whereas the truth is often a lot messier.
Yes.
This is, you know, another one of the challenges we have.
The truth is often complicated and messy, and it doesn't have the appeal of certainty, of a simple claim about something, which just has the disadvantage of being wrong.
This is, you know, when we were tracking these claims, they fit into three buckets. They were either true, they were either false, or they were unverified in that gray area in between. And we have we tracked about, you know, more than 200 rumors, online rumors to date, and there's a good number of them that remain unverified weeks and months after the fact. We may never get an answer to them. You know, we may never get an answer to the things going on in Syria and Iraq because it's hard to get eyes and boots on the ground to actually see what's going on and verify. And so this is part of the new world. There's so much ambiguity, there's so much information, and we don't get clear answers all the time. So how do we in the press actually have better ways of communicating ambiguity? I think that's one of the big challenges, and I think it's also an opportunity. If we can figure out better strategies for doing this, then people can be better informed.
What about the place of passion, of emotion? When you tell a story that has that, that's completely legitimate, that's the kind of thing that people tell others about. They either share it on social media or they just tell someone. When you're debunking something, it would be helpful if you could deliver some of that too.
Absolutely. The emotional appeal aspect is really important. And right now, the dominant emotion that a lot of people have when they read a debunking is to often think, well, what a spoil sport, or why did you have to go and ruin the joke? You know, there were examples that I saw as we were, you know, doing debunkings ourselves and looking at other ones out there where people were genuinely not necessarily interested in the truth because they had enjoyed that, you know, false story because it was entertaining or it reinforced what they already believed, or it, you know, it made them happy. And an example would be, at one point there was an image that circulated on Twitter that showed a motorcade, and the motorcade was arranged in a rather phallic fashion around this limousine. And the people who were sharing it on Twitter said,
"I saw this. Yeah, I remember this."
And this gave a lot of people a good laugh because this phallic motorcade allegedly was carrying Vladimir Putin. And so you have a very macho, very aggressive leader and supposedly traveling in this type of motorcade. And the picture was retweeted thousands of times on Twitter. And of course, you know, it wasn't true. There was a real picture of a motorcade. Some people had photoshopped the police motorcycles around to look in this phallic fashion. And when somebody, the person who had been the primary propagator of it on Twitter, who had received thousands of retweets for his one tweet, was told that it was not true, he basically made a comment saying, well, why do you have to go and ruin the joke? And if debunkers are spoil sports and ruining the joke, then they're just not going to have the same impact.
What is clear from talking to you today, Craig, is how much there is to this, how actually difficult it is to do all of these things and get them right. And really, it's a kind of much more expensive approach than just saying, hey, look at this thing. Is anybody doing it?
You know, it is absolutely, you know, the end result of this is looking at it and saying, man, we have a lot of work to do. And that's, you know, that can be frustrating. Or you can look at it and say, well, it doesn't seem like there are a lot of news organizations that are dedicating a lot of resources to this. So maybe there's an opportunity for people to step up. You know, I did talk to journalists and some organizations that are engaged in this activity. You know, the Washington Post has a weekly column, What Was Fake on the Internet This Week. Gawker, they have a sub-blog called Antiviral. And we're seeing organizations start to get into these efforts a little bit. They're still pretty scattered, and they're not really rooted in the research of what works and what doesn't work. So I think it's an early stage, and I think that unfortunately it means in most cases, you know, the incorrect stories, the misinformation tends to win. But I do think that if we can figure out ways to create debunkings that are just as viral as the stuff they're going after, then that's a win for everybody. That's traffic for the site. That's some glory for the journalist. And that's good information for everybody.
That was Craig Silverman. He's also the founder of Regret and Error at Columbia University in the United States. He's written a report called Lies, Damn Lies, and Viral Content. He was speaking there with Richard Ady. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is PDF to total journal.
Speed 220, Category 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Hi, my name's Colin Newell, and I'm the editor and creator of DXR.ca. Since the mid-90s, DXR.ca has been the go-to website for timely resources for the DXR, SWL, and broadcast listener. If you're looking for unbiased reviews of the most modern receivers and antennas, or are interested in participating in some of the more lively online forums all about radio, then come on by. DXR.ca, a world band radio website.
Now, there's a few things actually that I want to talk about before we get to this week's propagation. As you're probably aware, January 31st is the cutoff date for Radio Australia's shortwave transmissions and also shortwave transmissions to the Northern Territories. Now, over the last few weeks, a number of opponents have been trying to lobby the Australian government and the ABC to reverse the decision. The most recent one took place just a few days ago. However, it looks like this won't be taking place. Radio Australia and the ABC is set to discontinue all shortwave services January the 31st. But, of course, this is political. And in politics, that is actually a long way ahead, so we'll have to wait and see. Now, in case you wanted to tune in to find out if we will have any information on that, we won't be able to, and I'll explain why. Chinese New Year begins January the 26th and continues until February the 6th. So the following two editions of Media Network Plus for January the 28th and February the 4th will be encore presentations. We're taking another break just after we had one for Christmas and New Year. So on January the 28th and February the 4th, we're going to be presenting a documentary series produced and presented by Jonathan Marks called Wartime Deception. This is something, of course, that we have used before over the past 6 years on the program, but many of you enjoyed it so much that we have repeated it, and a number of you have asked for us to repeat it again. So we're doing that on January the 28th and February the 4th. And here's a little teaser.
But there were plenty of voices on the bands too. News from Canada being relayed to the troops in Europe.
The farmers of Canada are arming themselves this summer against their old enemies, black flies in Saskatchewan, warble flies in Manitoba, and grasshoppers in British Columbia.
Allied military units used to issue official communiques for the press agencies, Allied broadcasting stations, and anyone else who was listening, including the enemy. News from the Southwest Pacific Area headquarters, for instance.
GHQ, Southwest Pacific Area, communique number 93.
Most people didn't need to search the dial for weak military communiques. There were, of course, the regular broadcasting stations.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is a special bulletin read by John Snagg.
And on the other side of the political spectrum, there was Radio Tokyo with its English service.
Once again, our time is up, and your MC of the Hinomaru Hour must say, Oyasumi nasai. We hope you have enjoyed our Christmas programs and that they have served in some small way to let you know how your boys are living as prisoners of war in far-off Japan. We invite you to be with us again at this time tomorrow evening. This is your MC wishing you all a very Merry Christmas from the Hinomaru Hour. Good night, all. You are listening to Radio Tokyo.
Listeners in Britain were treated to the rather menacing voice of William Joyce, broadcasting from Berlin.
Germany calling, Germany calling, Germany calling. Here are the Reichsender ambush, station Bremen and station DXB on the 31-meter band.
That's just a small teaser of part one of Wartime Deception, produced and presented by Jonathan Marks. And you can hear that program next week, January the 28th, and part two on February the 4th. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. And, well, it's now time for, guess what? That's right, propagation. What's been happening and what we can expect over the next 7 days? Here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia and the Global HF Propagation Forecast through January 21st. Normal at low latitudes, normal to fair at middle latitudes, and fair at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through January 21st, magnetic conditions unsettled to active. Shortwave fade-outs unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through January 22nd, solar activity very low, geomagnetic field quiet to unsettled. FK Yanda in Prague predicts the geomagnetic field will be quiet to active on January 20th, 22nd, 27th, and 30th, February 3rd, 4th, 6th, and 8th. Active to disturb January 21st, 28th, February 1st, 2nd, and 7th. Quiet to unsettled January 23rd, 29th, 31st, February 5th. Mostly quiet on January 24th and 25th. Quiet on January 26th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field unsettled to active levels until January 24th and from January 27th to February 7th, with G1 minor geomagnetic storm levels likely February 3rd due to recurrent coronal hole high-speed stream effects with ANK indices peaking at 20 and 5. Lowest days and Ks of 5 and 2 on January 25th and 26th. Solar flux peaking at 80, January 20th to 25th, down to 75, February 3rd. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting across the Gulf of Mexico, January 21st and 22nd. Off the coast of Chile, January 20th to 24th. Around Namibia, South Africa to Madagascar, January 22nd to 24th. And off Myanmar, the morning of January 21st.
Thanks, Glenn. And Glenn will be returning with propagation for the program of February the 11th. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. If you add me as one of your friends on Facebook, I'll invite you to the Media Network Plus chat forum that we actually have on Facebook with a lot of interesting and lively discussions that take place. And you'll also see some of your old favorites there. I'm referring to people, and I'm not saying that they're old. but for example, Andy Sennett and Bob Zanotti and some other ones as well take part in the discussions. So just add me as one of your friends on Facebook, and I will invite you in. Anyway, that's all we have time for. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Parent wishing you well. 73 and 88 to the ladies. We'll be right back.